Welcome back to episode 138 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to explore the glory of rating gain, but we also dive into the norm, the plateaus, and the sad below that, the pits of despair. If you want to support the show, you go to Patreon Chess Journey. I want to thank our queen level supporters, Mike Rabeshi, Blundergoat, Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Diamond Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and our king level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, a great way to do this is to fill out the Google form in the show notes. You can DM me on Twitter. Both of these are great ways to let me know that you want to share your story with us all. And if you're interested in getting a better chess, and I know I'm interested in getting better at chess, you can check out Noel Studer's Next Level Training Program. There's a code in the show notes to support the show to give you a discount. Everyone wins. If you're interested in the chess gym, I also have a link now for the chess gym. And the cool thing is you can see me doing the chess gym. I've been doing quite a few of the calculation puzzles on stream, having a lot of fun doing that. This year I said I was going to try to do every day either a calculation puzzle or a rapid game. And so the chess gym has done a great job of supplying me with constant puzzles. So you can use that in the show or in the show notes. And then it's also, I think they have a program like a week for $1 you can try, which is a great way to just try it out, see if you like it. Okay, well, let's get on to the show today. We have Thomas. He is a Frenchman living in Paris. So we're already quite jealous of this person. And he's passionate about beach volleyball and chess. Thomas, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Kevin, for having me. Yes, I did. I actually, right now it's midnight in Paris, like the movie. But I was able to have three games, actually, three rapid games at my club. So on the over OTB chess, 12 minutes, three increments. And I lost one and won two.
Oh, very cool.
Against the French.
Against the French defense?
Yeah.
Okay. All three of your games, you were white and they were playing the French?
The first one I was black and I played a Slav. And I got hit with a line that I didn't know. And the other two I played as white and I faced the French, and I have quite a good record against the French, so let's keep going.
Okay. One of the reasons I stopped playing E4 is because I got annoyed playing the French. So what's your secret? Help me out here. What should I be doing?
So against the French, I actually got a recommendation from Grandmaster Daniel Naroditsky watching his YouTube video. He didn't say to me like on a personal anything. He just played this variation where it sounds like the Milner-Barry Gambit where but what you do is that you don't defend a second time your pawn on d4.
Okay.
So you play the advance, you have your queen's pawn on d4. Mm-hmm. And what you do when C takes d4, you play bishop d3.
Bishop d3. So, okay.
Yeah, the idea is you are going to overprotect your e5 pawn, right? With your knight that's already on f3. You're going to put your rook on e1, and your bishop on d3 is already looking at h7.
Yeah.
And what happens is that you get really quick development. And one of your ideas to put your knight on d2 and then b3. So you are going to win back the pawn if you want to. And if your opponent makes a mistake, like castling too quickly, you're going to be able to do a Greek gift sacrifice. And that's how I won one of my games tonight. My opponent forgot to... Yeah, I think he didn't really respected the line. I think he never saw it before. And I was able to get a quick win. And I really like this this variation, especially because I understand it. Thanks to his video and the explanation of Grandmaster Naroditsky, I was really able to understand why I was doing what I was doing. Yeah. And when I don't have this story, this plan, I usually don't get very very successful.
Yeah, that's what I love.
That's a line thing.
About his approach, right? Is that when he does those videos, he plays rapid games and he really goes into it. And then he'll even say like, oh, this is going to be really cool. I'm going to explain this. And then when the opponent doesn't play into it, he's like, all right, stay tuned to the end of the video. And I'm actually going to go back to that spot and explain it. So I feel like you get so much explanation out of those videos.
Yes, I really do. I mean, I've been, so I started like 2 years ago, but I started to play seriously only 1 year ago. And I decided that I wanted to be serious after all of his explanations, where I felt like, yeah, chess is a very interesting game and it has a lot of depth. I was not always able to see it before. Yeah. And he really has a way of both, he's simple sometimes, but if he wants to and when he gets going, it's like this rabbit hole or where you don't really know where you're going to end up, but it's just, he's engaging, he's interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a great teacher.
Yeah. The only problem I have, and this is not a problem for real, is that after I watch one of his videos, I'm usually like, wow, chess seems so much easier when he plays. Like, he just makes regular moves and crushes everyone. I'm like, how come I can't make regular moves and crush everyone?
So. Yeah, I have that effect as well. You watch like a speedrun video, you're pumped up, you play a game, and then you get crushed.
Right. How could I lose? Yeah, it's very interesting. All right, I'm especially intrigued by this going to the club. Were these rated games? Were these funsies games? Like, what's going on with this?
So it's very fun. We play together. It's just fun between us. We play together every Monday night.
Nice.
First of the month is a Blitz tournament.
Hmm.
5 minutes plus five. And the three other Mondays, we usually review games when one of us had a tournament or when we had club tournaments. So in France, I don't know if it's the same in the US. You have a club from a little town who plays another club from a little town. It's 4-on-4.
We do not. It's my thing that I'm most jealous about Europeans about. Okay, go ahead.
So we have that and we analyze together. And the only rule we have is no engine.
Oh, I love this rule.
This has been tremendous for me. And so today we were analyzing one of my games that I played Sunday. So it was yesterday. I lost. And so we were analyzing. And after that, we played a couple of rapid games.
That's cool.
And for me, it was really a game changer being in a local club. I know I've been hearing that on your podcast as well. But if you are interested in chess and you want to know if you like the game, if you want to really know, go live, go to your local club, play, analyze with someone that is experienced, and you'll see that, yeah, you're going to see if you like it or not.
Yeah, so would you say you were solely motivated to go to a club because of the greatness of this podcast?
No, but you contributed.
Okay. Okay, so this sounds pretty amazing. You've got a club every Monday. You did say something intriguing to me. You said, and I just want to clarify, did you say you guys play a Blitz tournament that's five with 5 second increment each week? I mean, every 4 weeks?
Yes. Yeah, oh, exactly. Okay.
So that's fascinating to me because I enjoy that time control a lot. And I was at a local club recently and I asked somebody if they wanted to play a Blitz game. And they said, yeah. And I set it up for 5-5. And someone walking by went, that's not even Blitz. You're ruining Blitz. So he did not like my time control.
Yeah, he wanted to play what, 3-0?
I think that guy said anything slower than 5-0 is not real Blitz in his mind.
Okay. Well, in my mind, 5 minutes is not enough to play 20 moves. So
yeah, I think 5-5 is a great time control. It's the one I played the most Blitz-wise for a long time until, like, the problem is in person, not many people play it. So I tried to, like, learn 3-2 to just be a little bit faster. But I love 5-5. It's a great one. Okay.
Yeah, we don't – oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to say we don't have any problems in our club regarding time controls. Someone proposes 12 minutes, we play 12. Someone says 5, we play 5. If you want to play a 3, you can. There is no,
okay,
no problem there.
That's fun. I guess I should ask, what's the Paris chess scene like? Like, is it a blossoming scene? Do you go over to Laurent Francenet's house every week and hang out? Like, what is it like over there?
Well, I don't know Laurent Fraissinet. I don't even know if he lives in Paris or no. Or no. What it's like, I'm actually discovering. What I can tell you is that you have a lot of young people playing. And I'm not talking about your regular 8 to 16 years old. You have young adults, like 20. The guy I played yesterday was 16. You have people like me around 30, 35, who, you know, we come back to the game, or people around 24 finishing their studies coming in, and the tournaments are full. If you don't register like 3 to 4 weeks prior, you won't get in. So it's really cool. We have a couple of chess bars in Paris where, well, I think you have a few influencers, chess influencers or chess players. Most of all, they are chess players, great chess players, title players, who made videos in this bar. I think Anna Crumbling did it. I think one of the Botes sister did it as well. So you go to a bar, you get a beer and you play chess. And one of my favorite place to go, I actually went on it 2 times. It's the Jardin du Luxembourg, so the Luxembourg Garden. It's where we have the Senate. It's the biggest park in Paris, I believe. It's as well the most beautiful, and you have every day you have 10, 20, 30 people, from retired people to students, just outside playing chess. And you have chess boards on the table outside. So if you are a chess fan, you're in Paris, you can go treat yourself and have a couple of games in one of the most beautiful parks in Europe.
That sounds amazing. I'm going tomorrow.
Maybe for the Olympics.
Okay, well, cool. I didn't realize Paris had such a blossoming chess scene. That's really cool.
I can't say blossoming, as I was really not into the scene before, but I feel like there is this there is a rumble. I mean, people actually play. You want to play in Paris, you can.
Nice.
For free if you want to.
That's amazing. Okay. Well, let's talk your backstory real quick. Did you play at all as a child? Did you just sort of discover this game as an adult? Well, what is your background like?
So I got taught chess by a friend when I was 4 or 5 years old. This friend, his father was playing, was a good player, and we were friends, and he taught me how the pieces moved and stuff. And he became a very well respected mathematician in a big math school in France. And so I was playing. I even did a kids tournament when I was 6. And then I stopped. I stopped because I was living in a little town. And in my little town, nobody played. My parents didn't play.
Yeah.
And I had Windows, and you had like this game, Windows 95, with a chess game in 3D. And I was playing against the computer. Yeah. And for me, chess at that time was boring, because I had no one to explain it to me.
Yeah.
And all the games that I played were the same. I don't even know what I was playing. I think it was some kind of Italian. But when no one explained it to you and you are 6, 7 years old, I mean, you get bored with it. And
And the computer responds the same every single time and then crushes it.
Yeah. And I don't think the software was very engaging at that time.
Yeah.
It's not like some of the... I saw you have chess for kids, and nowadays you can get your kid playing on the computer, and it's very friendly. But we didn't have that. I didn't have YouTube to go on and discover everything there is to know about chess. So I stopped around 7, and I think I played maybe a couple of games when I was studying in Ireland for a year with European friends, but was just, you know, friendly. And I discovered the game again with the Queen's Gambit, like most of people that are playing nowadays. I really enjoyed the show. And then I started to, so I wanted to see the games that they were playing. Were they real games? That was in my mind. Was it real games? And I found a video made by Gotham Chess. And then seeing his video, I got really interested in the way he was presenting the game. And I was not even playing, but I was watching hours and hours of his content. Because it was funny, it was interesting. And then I decided to play again.
Okay. So you're brought in by a combination of the Queen's Gambit and the one and only teacher, Gotham Chess.
Yes, I did.
Okay. That is a similar story to many. It's funny that, like, you put into YouTube chess and you're going to get Gotham Chess. And I got to say, it's a good thing, right? He's so good that I'm glad he's the first person a lot of people see, because he is engaging and he brings people in. So that's awesome.
Yeah, that's what he did to me, at least.
Okay. So Gotham Chess has brought you into chess. What's your first step? Is it like searching the internet, best chess opening?
I think I did that at some point.
Yeah, I mean, everyone does it at some point. I still do it sometimes.
What I did was watching famous games on YouTube channels.
Okay.
And so I stumbled across Agathe Mator. I saw John Bartholomew had quite a lot of games, and I really enjoyed it, because each time I was playing so bad that I was like feeling so bad about myself that I prefer to see content and to understand an opening rather than playing it. Which is, if I could do it all over again, I would play, and play some more.
Yeah.
But that's how I enjoyed it. So,
mm-hmm.
And I started playing more and more a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And I got really serious about it a year ago, saying, okay, this is what I want to do, and this is what I want to focus on. And so I started to buy courses online, to buy books, to really study some of the principles. And it got me somewhere, but I believe since I started to play over the board tournaments, long games, and since I started in a club, I feel like I gained a lot of knowledge. If not ELO, I really gained a lot of knowledge.
All right, let's kind of take this journey step by step. So you get into chess, and I think a lot of adults do this, right? Where it's kind of like, chess is painful if I'm going to lose every time. I want to get some knowledge. I want to accumulate some material that I know. So were there any particular players you gravitated towards when you were watching these famous games? Or was it just kind of like any famous game, you were kind of going through it to get a little background?
So I got really excited by Paul Morphy's game. And then I enjoyed Alekhine or Aliokhine. I don't know really how you're supposed to pronounce it. It was really spectacular. And then of course you have Mikhail Tal, and I wanted to emulate those kind of players. That was the beginning. Now I really don't play like them. I really am not an aggressive player at all. But yeah, I was looking a lot at the games, and of course Garry Kasparov.
Okay, so you liked some pretty aggressive play, and again, I think this is such a great piece of advice for everyone. Like, you don't know what kind of player you are at the beginning, right? Like, you looked at some cool games and you said like, I'm an aggressive player. And then with more time, you're like, maybe I'm not actually.
That's exactly what happened to me. And you have to get yourself out there to understand who you are on the chessboard.
Yeah.
It sounds very philosophical, but you have to try it before you know it. It's And I don't think you have an explanation. You cannot choose it. It's either you're comfortable or not, either you see it or not, and either you feel like, yeah, it's just a question of comfort. And so I was playing the Vienna. I really enjoyed the Vienna. I've studied the Vienna thanks to Gotham Chess, and as well to Daniel Narodisky. I played a lot of Vienna, and I hated every position I had, even though I knew I was winning. But it was messy. Yeah. It was tactical. My
Okay.
king was exposed. And it took me 6 months to understand that I was not a Vienna player.
Okay.
But I got a lot from it. Like now in every position, I look at F4 when I want to attack. But I had to make that painful journey of getting to lose when you know you're ahead. Like I used to win. I used to have a piece or two pawns and very aggressive position. But yeah, I had to find only moves, like three, four moves in a row. And
right.
sometimes you just can't. And when positions are tactical, I take a lot of time to calculate. And it's a rook end game. You have two more pawns. They are not connected. And then you blunder something and it's a draw. You lose. And so the Vienna was not for me.
Okay. Well, that's a good discovery. I'm curious if when you're looking at all these like super tactical games, are you thinking I need to do a lot of tactical work so I can play like these players or not? Like were you also solving a lot of puzzles along with it or just watching these games?
So I was solving a lot of puzzles, but I was not solving them the right way. So I lost a lot of time there. What I mean by that is, so I, to me, the most important was seeing the pattern. So thanks to a lot of people on internet and the chess.punk communities, I knew how to improve to have pattern recognition and stuff. So I bought I had a plan with chess.com to be able to do 300 puzzles a day.
Yeah.
I did that on Puzzle Rush for a couple of months.
Oh,
And
my.
I think it got me, I won't say nowhere, but I don't think that was efficient.
Okay.
Because I was not thinking. I was trying to find the right answer and to see if I was right or wrong. And it just don't come. You can try your move. Oh, it's not the good move. Okay, next. You know, I was not taking my time.
Right.
And when you do a puzzle rush, the first 10 to 15 problems are mate in ones, mate in twos. It's really easy. And you get into this rhythm where you know, like you pass puzzles. 2 seconds, 3 seconds, and then you get to the hard stuff, and you expect your body is trained to,
yep.
to do it in 3 seconds, and you fail, and when you don't fail, you don't have the correct method.
Right.
So
you made the most aggressive looking move.
Yeah, and so you don't look for your opponent's resources, and then you are really stuck in a game. You are stuck in difficult puzzles. You are stuck. So. What I did was I bought a book and I was solving puzzle on a page and I was writing all the answers. And the bonus that I had from that is, first of all, it's organized. So it's better for your memory. And second of all, I was able to drastically improve my visualization, especially with the coordinates. Like 6 months ago, I was not able to visualize an opening by saying e4, e5, knight f3, knight c6, bishop c4, and stuff. Now I can because of the puzzles, because I took time to read the coordinates, to write them down, to think about it in my head. And so I really think, well, for me at least, but I really think if you want to improve on puzzles, don't go to Puzzle Rush or to any resources online, buy your book. I recently bought the books from Martin. It's Chesterton. I'm sorry if I say his name wrong. I bought his intermediate books, and I'm I'm solving 20 puzzles a day.
Nice.
It's really nice.
This is the Chess Ladder series, right?
Exactly, the new edition.
Okay, and what one did you decide to start with?
It's the Tactics Ladder.
Okay.
Sorry, what did you ask?
I was wondering, like, what rating level? I thought it was broken down by ratings.
Yeah, it is. I have the Intermediate 2, 1400, and Intermediate 3, 1600.
Okay, cool.
And one book is 500 puzzles.
Yeah, that's a lot of puzzles. Nice. Okay, so you're saying basically doing puzzles through intuition and just clicking the first aggressive looking answer you decided was wrong, but it's also really hard to fight against that. So if you just get a book, you don't have to worry. You don't have to fight your own mind. You can just solve the puzzles.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Because I tell myself, hey, you don't have to worry. You don't need to get the book. Just be careful. And sometimes I am. But I notice when I get tired and lazy, I find myself doing that where I'm like, wait, I didn't even look at my opponent's resource here. I just found an aggressive move and made it. And it happened to be right. But I don't think that means I should get credit for solving this puzzle.
Yeah, you get this false credit.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know that it's false, or you want to make it real. Like, yeah, I'm good. I solved this super duper tactics, where in fact you did not even consider a defensive move. And so, yeah.
And it's like, okay, you got it. But if that were a real game, you might have missed it. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, I hear that. So, okay. So you're really liking the puzzle books. Is the Martin Eustason Say Chess Ladder series your only one, or are there some other puzzle books you've really liked?
I have one from John Nunn.
Oh, okay.
What is it? I don't remember the name. It's his very, very famous tactics books. It's recommended by a lot of people. It has this blue cover. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name.
Not a
problem. I have it around here.
I didn't remember that Nunn had a tactics book, so that's cool. He's always good.
Yeah, so I have that, which is really nice for pattern recognition because you have themes. So you know what you're training. Learn Chess Tactics. That's the name.
Okay. Learn Chess Tactics by Nunn.
Yes. And the next one will be, I don't know, I'm going to finish the one from... from the tactics ladder, but that's the two that I have.
Okay. And that's going to take you a while. That's 500 puzzles.
Yeah. Okay. I'm already halfway through the first book. So,
okay.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. Right.
What's your reasoning for going hard into tactics? Is it just you hear everyone saying it? Do you feel it in your games that that's a weakness that you want to, you know, like rectify? Like, why have you decided to spend so much time on tactics?
It's a bit of both. It's everybody says do tactics, so I do tactics, and then it's also because on my first over the board tournament, like it was mid-January, I really missed quite a few tactics. I really missed them. I didn't even so I'm pretty good when I know it's a tactic. I'm going to find it. It takes time, but I'm going to find it. But I liked the pattern recognition to see, oh, something is wrong in this position. There must be something. And that is only through repetition and really, really working the position, I feel like. And so I decided that I'm going to do it, that everyone says you should do when you want to improve. First thing first is, yeah, be better at tactics.
Yeah, seems reasonable.
And I would say that I got pretty good positions without tactics. Tactics is about, to me, it's about converting. So you can play really decently without really working tactics, but you are not going to win without tactics. That's my feeling after just a few months. I think it was the area of the game where it was the weakest. So, yeah, I had to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm still in the process of doing it.
Gotcha. Yeah, it seems very reasonable. You can memorize your opening line. you can understand the strategy that goes with that opening. But if your tactics are really weak, there's going to be that one moment. And if you lose a piece off the moment, it doesn't really matter that you have a good position anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, so I think I've played 13 long games over the past month.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, I had the chance to go to two tournaments in a row. And in every game, it was decided by a tactic. I had no draws. But every game is either my opponent had a tactic and found it or not, or I found it and I won. So, yeah, it's really, it is fundamental to have really good tactical awareness. And yeah, and that's, I didn't want to believe it at first. I wanted to be a strategic player and put my pieces in the right squares and play 15 moves of theory.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just not how it works.
And a lot of good strategy is backed up by tactics anyway. It's one of the things I really learned. I went through Karpov's best game collection, and he played really strategic masterpieces, but tons of moves that would be like, wait, he can't move there. And it's like, it makes the whole strategy work, but it's only backed up by this little four move tactic that makes it work. And if you don't see that, then you can't make the move. And so it just felt like even in those very strategy heavy games, tactics were sort of like the skeleton that was holding up the whole body.
Yeah, for sure. Even when you defend a position.
Yeah.
I defended 20 move position, even though I was up, I had a rook for a knight, but I had to, he had the two bishops and I tactics were all over the place and I had to defend tactically and I couldn't defend positionally because his bishop were so strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to defend tactically and without tactics, like, well, I ended up losing, but I was going to be blown off the board, even though I was up a pawn and a rook for a knight.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, and I missed a tactic. That's how I lost the game. I missed a tactic he had and yeah, I left a square and that's it.
Yeah. I'm just curious what your rating trajectory has been like. Like when you started on chess.com, where did you sort of first settle?
So I started around 1,000. I think you start at 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
I lost a couple of games early and yeah, I was 1,000 and I stayed 1,000 for at least a year. I think I went 1,200 after a year and then I got to 1,400, 1,500, 1,450 in span of 3 weeks. I was winning everything.
Uh-huh.
I had like this big momentum. And then I had to stop playing online because I had so many things to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny because I realized yesterday that I played only 6 games online in the past 6 months.
Oh, that's really interesting. So in that period where you went from 1,200 to 1,500 and what you said like 2 weeks, did you play a ton in that period?
Yeah. So I play online. So basically I don't really like to play online. I don't have a good feeling or I don't know. I don't really like it.
Okay.
And the losses are way harder online for me than they are over the board. I don't understand why, but I really take it really, it's really, it hurts for me to lose online, even though it's a stupid game. I really, it hurts. And I'm pissed at myself. I have this really negative feeling. And so that's why I stopped playing. And
gotcha.
I only play online when I'm on vacation, I have time to play. Like I'm in a good mood, I'm relaxed, I have my coffee. I know that I'm not going to be disturbed for at least 2 hours. And so I need to be on a computer. I need to be comfortable, and then I play, and then I win. So if you look at my profile, it's like, yeah, I play on Christmas because I was at my parents and it was really comfortable. And I think I played maybe 20 something games, and I think I won 15 games. Like, I'm sure somebody had to, the algorithm had to report me on something. But I was like on this winning streak, but because I felt good. And when I feel good, comfortable, the losses are not so hard on me, and I just play better. Whereas when I'm over the board, I'm always calm.
Because it sounds like you're in a club and you're enjoying the environment.
Yeah, maybe because I have dedicated that time to chess. I have made the effort to go to the club or to go to the tournament. My phone is off. It's somewhere in a bag. It's away. I'm not disturbed. And I really have this capability of focusing. And maybe that's the problem when I play online. I have too many things popping up, or you receive a text. You have this news about, Cillian Murphy had an Oscar, or I don't know. And I don't really know why, but I just know that I play online when I have time, when I feel relaxed, and mostly it's when I'm on vacation.
Okay. I have some advice for you. Okay. You ready for this? Feel free to disregard. Yes. So it sounds like you're playing on chess.com. That's where your main rating is.
I also have a LeChess account where I'm 1750.
Okay. Because this was going to be my suggestion. Choose one of them to be your like super serious. I only do this when I'm in a good mood and the circumstances are right. And that's the rating that I'm kind of protective of. And then have the other one, whether that's LeChess or chess.com, just be a rating you're willing to tank just to say, like, I had the experience of playing a game because I know it's good for my chess to keep playing and getting more reps in. I think it can be a nice way to free yourself from that burden of like having to feel bad when I lose. Like for me, when I lose on like my LeChess Blitz rating, I really don't care at all. Like I will do wild things on that account because that's like a total fun thing. I use LeChess for classical. I care about that a lot. And then chess.com is my rapid rating. And chess.com is my blitz rating. And even all my blitz ratings, I don't care that much about. But it like gives me that freedom to just say like, some accounts are whatever. And some accounts I'm more protective of. And like, if it's late at night, I'm not just going to jump on chess.com and play a rapid game I know I'll lose. But I might do it on my LeChess account because that's the one I've deemed as the account I play more for fun on.
And do you enjoy the game when you, like, you know, it's your account that doesn't mean anything to you and you just play what you want to play, whatever the outcome? Do you enjoy
the game when you know? Differently, right? So it's not like the peak of my competition. I think about it more as like lifting weights, right? It's not a weightlifting competition. It's more just like I'm in the gym, I'm lifting some weights, and if it doesn't go well, that's fine. Right. And I can like for the LeChess games, I can still examine them. I can still learn from the opening. I can still see the tactics I'm missing. I'm getting useful information out of those games, win or lose. Even though I know it's not my best, right? Like I'm not giving it my very best, but I can still learn even when I'm not giving it my best.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'm going to try that to have one of the two accounts will be for fun and another one would be to play to the best of my ability. I never really tried that. That's a good advice. Thank you.
Yeah, it works well for me. I can't guarantee it'll work well for you, but it's just been very freeing for me. Like there's times when I'm exhausted, but I'm like, I'm in the mood to play a chess game and I think I could learn something from it, but I know it's not going to go that great. And that's fine.
Are you very protective of your rating online?
I go through phases. So it's like, for a while, I wasn't that protective of my chess.com rapid rating. I would kind of play whenever. But right now, I'm like on a climb and I'm up to like 1860 or something. I'd kind of like to hit 1900 if I'm that good. And so if I'm really tired, I'm like, maybe it's not the best moment to play. But like, I might get in an over the board game and be 4 hours in and be exhausted. So I do still think it's valuable to play when I'm tired. I just kind of would rather not mess with that rating right now if I'm tired. So I might play on Lee Chess or play a Blitz game instead.
Okay, good. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. But I do want to hear something. You said you went from 1,000 to 1,200, I think, or it was 1,200 to 1,400 in like 2 weeks. I guess help me remember what rating range that was. And then what do you think was responsible for such a tremendous rating gain in such a short amount of time?
So it was from 12 to 1450, which is more or less my current rating. I almost went up to 1500. Well, I did cross 1500, but I went down. Yeah, but it was like for one game. So I'm just bragging.
That counts, man. That counts.
What happened was, for some reason, it's not an easy answer to come by. I think that I played logical moves. That this is when I decided. So I'm a curious person, you know, sometimes I want to know. And in chess, it's a problem for me because sometimes I see something, I don't see a refutation, but I feel like, yeah, maybe in 6-7 moves, I'm not going to be good. And I want to try it. Like I'm a gambler, I knew some sacrifices were not completely sound, or the refutation was really hard to find. And I want to see if my opponent sees it. You know what I mean? Like I want to try, because I find this beautiful move or any, yeah. So I try, which is not how you're supposed to play when you want to win. Right. And I'm the same way when I analyze alone. I put the engine way too much because I want to know the answer. And I think that's not the good mindset. That's not the correct mindset. I'm trying to work through it when I analyze my games. But anyway, to answer your question, I think I did this 200 points leap because I decided to play more conservative. Like, okay, are my pieces protected? Do I have loose pieces? What is my worst piece? Is there an outpost? You know, is this kind of questions that I was not really asking myself before, and I try to ask them more with a bit more conscious. Like, my knight should be on f5. I don't know, in the Italian, you want your knight to be on f5 at some point. And so, okay, that's my plan, and I follow my plan. You know, it's like this baby step. Everything is protected. Good. What is my worst piece? Okay. Where is the best square? Good. And so this is the first thing. And the second thing is I finally decided to spend more time watching my opponent's move than thinking of my plans. I had this problem that I wanted to have the perfect setup, and I was only watching my pieces. And I was not looking at my adversary enough. And I think the two went together. When I started to look 60 or 70% of the time about what my opponent can do, I started to think of, yeah, this is not defended. This is loose. This is a backward pawn, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, I had a problem with understanding the position I was in, and in a span of 2 weeks, I was winning nonstop, and then I hit a brick wall again, and it was tactics.
There's always a brick wall waiting in chess.
I mean, I was not good enough on tactics, and I was not good enough in my openings, and this is something that I read a lot on the internet, like opening don't matter. I I really disagree with that.
Okay.
I mean, if I'm just a normal player, you know, I'm just speaking for my level, but it helps me so much to know 8, 9, 10 moves of theory and the plan with it. I mean, when I get in a position that I don't know after move 4, especially if it's a gambit line or something, it's so uncomfortable. I lose so much time.
Yeah.
I start to see, we say in French, seeing ghosts,
yeah,
like seeing things that are not there on the chess board. Are starting to doubt normal moves. Like it's this very uncomfortable position. And for me, the opening gives you this this first floor, or this first layer of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I know where I am. I know what's going on, more or less. I have balance,
yep.
You know.
I agree. We're going to cover that in a second. I just want to follow up. It sounds like you made your big jump because you were fully immersing yourself in each move. Does that seem correct?
Yeah, I would have not thought about putting it that way, but it seems correct.
Yeah, because I think it is tempting. Just your opponent makes a move, your intuition kind of says, ooh, this would be cool, and you do it, and you kind of get away with it for a while, but you hit some point where it's like, okay, now I have to play like serious chess every move. I can't take any moves off. I can't be like, ah, that opponent's move looks weird, I'm going to ignore it. Like every time I've done that, it's like, oh, actually, no, I'm just a fool. That move was actually awesome.
Oh no, my queen.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so coming to openings, yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's a sort of remnant of a different time when you could just not know any opening theory and be totally fine because your opponent didn't either. And so it actually worked out fine. And I think a lot of like high level players have this misconception that you can just kind of like know some principles and you'll be fine. But I think you're right. I'm not saying you should memorize 10 moves of theory. I'm saying you should have a good understanding of where your opening is going. And in order to do that, you might need to memorize, you know, 4 to 8 moves, depending on the line, depending on the sharpness of the line. But at a minimum, I think it is really nice to know your plan. So you're not just like every game figuring things out for move 5, but you're like, I know what I'm playing towards, right? Like I have a good idea of where we're going.
The plan is the most important thing. Well, the plans, or why do you play this opening? I mean,
yeah,
I don't know if it's because I'm an adult or, but I understand more by stories. I mean, I need to my opening to have a story. The story is in the Italian, you attack the center. You know what I mean? You attack f7, you attack the center, and you try to reroute your knight to the king side. The story in the King's Indian is that you are going to launch a kingside attack. Or so I need that story. If I don't have that story, I don't remember the moves, or I don't know where pieces go. And this is really new for me to try to understand openings by stories. And it's been really, really effective for me. I'm not losing on the opening anymore. I mean, at least the opening that I play them seriously. I get an edge out of every position after the opening. I'm winning. I'm not winning, but I'm very comfortable. I have a pawn. I have in every game that I play, I have an edge. Then I lose it because I have a problem converting.
Yeah.
But at least I'm playing and I'm putting my opponent through difficult choices. And that is, for me, it's so important to have this. It's also a confidence thing, you know, like I know what I'm playing. And
yeah.
So I know a guy from my club is like 1400 feet over the board, French rating.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is a master at openings. He knows everything about theory. It's incredible. I mean, he really, it's incredible.
Wow.
You play one move that is not a main line, he's lost and he doesn't know how to play. But if you enter his line, you're going to lose.
Yeah, it sounds like you know how to beat him then. Just play a weird move.
Yeah. So he hates the fantasy. So I play the fantasy. He hates the Alapin Sicilian. So I play the Alapin Sicilian. But, you know, openings are just one part of the game, but it's the part that is essential for your balance. And for me, it needs to be a story.
Yeah, I hear you. And I've been trying to engage more with the science of learning. And that's one of the big things that's come out from, you know, learning and memorization is that when you have a story to go along with it, it's just so much easier to remember it than just a random string of moves or words. When you can put in your own story, how much more effective that can be.
It's especially true with the Italian, and that's what I'm playing now. And I play the Italian because of that. And I play especially the Gioco Pianissimo.
Oh, okay.
And in the Gioco Pianissimo, you have so much move orders, especially in the position that is like around move 10 or something, whenever everybody is castled. And but you have maybe 5, 6, 7. I don't have a precise number, but you have really a lot of move orders. And if you don't understand, if you don't know the story of the move, you are going to get wrecked. I mean,
interesting.
If you, yeah. And so it seems complicated at first, but when you understand it, it's really a great feeling, like you feel in control of your game. And you have a great video of Anish Giri explaining that to Chess Base India. It's really cool. He talks about if you play the Italian, please go watch that video. It's incredible.
What's the video again?
It's a video where Anish Giri
goes
over the move order in the Italian, and he's with Chess Base India.
Okay. Is this a free video on YouTube?
It's completely free. It's on YouTube. I think he was promoting his E4 course.
Okay.
He had an E4 course on the Italian, on Chessable. So I don't have the course, but I do have that video. And for me, it's been really nice.
So have you been doing most of your openings learning that it seems like you think is really important? Are you doing that on Chessable, courses, YouTube? Like, what's been your main go-to for these openings?
So I have a few courses online. I bought a few of Levy's courses.
Okay.
I have a Chessable course for an E4 repertoire from, I don't remember, he's Coach Andreas.
He's also Coach Andras Toth?
Yes, exactly. He's really nice. I really like what he's doing as well. So I have that. I have way too much books. I like books. I'm a historian. I have thousands of books. It's crazy, especially when I move. But I use them as a manual, as a dictionary. Like I have a position or I have a move order, I don't know, I just go to see that position.
Okay.
And overall what I like to do is I go on database and I watch games on positions that I don't know.
Okay.
Well, that's what I do.
You love chess books so much. I too love chess books. Can I get your list of your 5 favorite chess books?
Yes. First is Winning Chess Strategies.
Okay. By Yasser.
From
Sirwan.
Yasser. Okay. Yes. This is my first strategy book, and I felt like, really, I improved a lot reading it. So this is the first one. The second is Silman's course on endgames. What I like about it is that if you are 1,000, you're going to get a lot from his section. If you are 1,200, you're going to get a lot from his section. So, and it's very easy to understand. He was a great author. So I really like this book. I enjoy a lot all the games from Copa Blanca.
Okay.
I don't really know who edited the book, but it's like 60 or 70 games from Capablanca.
Okay. There's a couple good Capablanca books. There's like Capablanca's Best Chess Endings. That's a good one. Maybe it's a different one though.
No, it's the cover is grayish. It's a is it Golombek? I'm not sure.
Okay.
The author.
I'm not sure.
So that's three.
Okay.
Then
he's like, I only have three books. I was just kidding.
I'm seeing behind you, you have a lot more than that. I really like Simple Chess as well.
Okay. By Michael Singer.
Yes, exactly. It was a recommendation from Neil Bruce, the
Yeah.
legendary Neil Bruce.
That's an excellent.
And so, yeah, I really, it's very important for me. I still read it sometimes to remember myself what is a good and bad bishop and how should I play against it.
Yeah.
And then my last book, I'm currently reading Pawn Structure, about pawn structure, and
Okay.
it's where I'm sorry, I forgot the exact name of the book. I don't have it here. It's the chapters are made depending on the openings. You know, you have the first,
Oh,
I think it's Sicilian.
Is it Chess
I think it's,
Structures by Flores, maybe?
yes, Flores, exactly.
Yeah, that's a
and
great book.
I'm currently reading it and I'm blown away by everything that I don't know about structures. Yeah, that would be
That's
my
a
top
book
five books.
you'll probably read again. I think I've read various
Okay.
chapters several times as I've sort of deepened my understanding of a structure. And then I'm like, ooh, I need to go back and read that chapter again because there's a lot that I don't know about the structure. And I learn a lot from the second and even the third readings from specific chapters.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not ready yet for structures, pawn structures. I feel like I need to be much better on strategic concepts, on tactics. So I want to know about pawn structures, so I read about it, but I'm not sure it's the right time. But yeah, it can't hurt, right?
Yeah, it's the hard thing with chess, right? It's like, when is the right time to try to gain this knowledge? Like, I've read so many books that seemed like they would be great, and I could tell they were great books, and I enjoyed reading them. But like a week later, I was like, I actually don't know that I retained anything from this book, which is the big challenge.
Yeah. I have a question for you
Yeah.
About books about games. You know, like I have the Capablanca book, I have a few others. When I put the games on my chessboard and stuff, I can't bear myself to pause and really understand the positions and try to find the move. I always see the next move and I always play it, and I'm not. How do you study it by yourself? I mean,
Yeah,
I feel
I
like I'm.
like to do a more of a guess the move style, and I find it easier to do with other people. So, for instance, my daughter and I are going through Morphe's games, and that's a lot
Oh.
easier. We stop and we talk about the position, and so there's not that feeling of like I need to rush through. I'd say my deepest study of games is when I'm streaming them. Even if there's only one person there, because I'm streaming, I kind of feel like I need to stop and explain each of these moves and examine them and try to get behind them before moving on. Because I hear you, sometimes when I'm on my own, I tell myself, like, we're going to really go deep today, just sitting at the board. And then, like, suddenly six moves have gone by, and I'm like, wait, why? I don't even know what just happened. How did my hand move the piece six times without me even realizing?
Yeah, exactly. I was putting a game yesterday. It was who was it? It was a French defense again, and it was a really complicated game. Sorry, It was Nigel Short against Grandmaster Tinman. I think it's a German.
Okay.
And it was this classical French and whatever. And you had pins everywhere. You had imbalances. You had, and I was making the moves. And I went, at one point I stopped because I mean, I was amazed by the resources they were finding.
Yeah.
But because I didn't see them, but I didn't really see, I didn't really consider candidate moves. I didn't see the threats. And so I lost. It took me half an hour to go through the game, but I actually lost half an hour. Like I don't even, no, but it's true. I spend a lot of times, but I feel like it was for show because I didn't think about the position.
Yeah, it's
And
hard because I'm wondering, like, can I go through games like that and just be like, now I've seen this, and so somewhere in my brain it remembers what I looked at, or if because I'm looking at it so passively, is it just totally gone and completely worthless? I also wrestle with that.
yeah, and for me, it's almost worthless because when I study my games or when we study Grandmaster games at my club, without, and I don't have the book in front of me. The book is hold, held by another gentleman.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then you engage with the position. Then you see, okay, why can't he do that? And sometimes we don't understand why. I mean, like the commentary of the book says, obviously it is this move.
Yeah,
Yeah.
right.
But I've spent 20 minutes on the position and I, for me, it's wrong. And so, and then you go to an engine and you understand why.
Yeah.
But that's valuable to me. That's
Yeah.
how I retain things
Even
and
if
I'm
you're
not able to.
wrong, just the wrestling with the position helps you really understand it.
Yes. And for me, it's
I agree.
the most important thing. And that's why I'm not buying any more game books and I'm not studying any more games by my own
Okay,
because,
that's fair.
yeah.
Yep, I think a couple methods you can do to try to fight this are like have a piece of paper where you actually just cover the next moves, or you find the game itself in like a study somewhere, and then you just click. I don't even know how to do it in Lee Chess, but I think you can, where you have it just like you just guess the next move instead of
Yeah.
actually seeing it. I think those two ways can help you, but it can be hard, and I understand that it can be
Yeah, I
hard to
heard you
fight
can
against that.
hide it. You can't do it on chess base, though. I tried.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Well, Thomas, I feel like we could talk for another hour, but unfortunately, we are gonna have to wrap up the show today. So, thanks so much for coming on. Is there any last words you want to share with our audience? Maybe places where people can get in contact with you?
Well, if they want to on Twitter, maybe you will put it my Twitter account. I'm just consulting Twitter. I'm not posting anything. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to talk about what I love to do. It really, yeah, talking makes it real. It makes you understand. Yeah, it's. So I really enjoy the work that you and others are doing because you don't realize, but it helps people like me when we don't, when we fear about going out there, when we fear about putting in time and effort. You really help us, especially with issues of confidence and issues of, yeah, that's fine to get it wrong. That's and support. Sometimes I see a chess punks hashtag on, oh, I went to this tournament, it happened this, happened that, and you see all the positive feedback or you see the advice, and I really have a good time reading that sto those stories, sometimes commenting on them, saying, okay, I do this, and so you are doing something that helps people and that help them enjoy a game. That is timeless. So thank you, Kevin, and thanks to all of you guys who are listening and who are promoting the game and exchanging about it in a constructive manner.
Yeah, thanks so much for the kind words, and couldn't agree more. Chess Punks community is the community. Like, I'm tempted to just limit my Twitter to only show Chess Punk's material, because even when I just like scan through Chess Twitter, I'm like, I don't know, some of this I'm not really enjoying. A lot of negativity here, but the Chess Punks is almost all positive and just good feelings. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's nice to see human beings being nice.
Yes, it really is. Okay, well, everyone out there, I hope this is the week. Warlike Thomas, you gain like 250 points in 2 weeks. But if it's not, if you're like me and you go 2-1 against talented middle schoolers and lose 17 points as a result, I'm sorry, but come back next week and hopefully we'll have some more advice for you that is helpful. I'll see you next time, everybody. Goodbye.